Sure that I introduce the members. We have one member who is a bit delayed by the change of venue that is joining us now, which is Honorable Mulala. Thereafter, the introduction would allow you to introduce yourself and then get straight to your presentation as communicated to yourself, as well as the topic that you have chosen, which will then be followed by members interacting with you. So if you count, give or take, that's your 10 minutes maximum, plus each member would be afforded an opportunity, maximum 5 minutes, to interact with you. So the 5 minutes does include your answers that you give to the member in that school. I do have Honorable Kubeka on the left, Honorable Kubeka, and we have Honorable Machozi, Honorable Faku, and we have Honorable Fantan, Honorable Dr. Ndlozi on that side. As I said, Honorable Mulala is joining us soon. As I said, this will now be an opportunity to know better Ms. Amanda Tula. So we're now handing over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. As indicated, my name is Amanda Tula. I'm a businesswoman. And yes, I'm here to present on a topic that is specifically, your first question was that I needed to provide the overview of the institutional approach after having reviewed the International Telecommunications Regulation and looking at NDP as well as the National Integrated Information Communication policy review report, and therefore extrapolate out of that the key ICT regulatory imperatives as related to ICASA. And in that process, looking at what the international telecommunication looks at around the regulation approach, I think fundamentally is that the mandate for regulation has to be held by how the country's politics have to be considered and the drive for policy that must be considered. But of course, it must ensure that the authority itself has all the competences required in relation to the market itself and the balance in with government. And in terms of issues around the regulation and the laws that the minister creates, the actual policies and drives that, and the regulator is basically implementing those policies that have been put in place. And in terms of where we are as a country, the ITU looks at various models, and one of them is a single sector regulation, which basically exclusively ring-fences telecommunications sector on its own. And then around the convergence, which is where South Africa basically is looking at currently playing, where it's a number of various telecommunication postal services with us and broadcasting and media into it. And the other one around the multi-sector is really looking around creating a regulation that is traditionally linked to adjacent markets being incorporated within the multi-sector. And the last one, I think, you'll see that at the top of my understanding error, but it's meant to be where they make a choice to not have a specific regulation, but allow the institution to stay alone. Afternoon, sir. Allow the...
Sorry for that. Madam Lala, I'll sit on the other side, that's it.
Thank you. And when we talk about convergence, when you look at the spectrum, South Africa is in Africa, we have started the process of having policies associated towards convergence. And I think the trend is moving more towards convergence where about 75% of countries are moving towards convergence and 25% sit outside of that. So fundamentally, on a big picture, the regulator has to consider how they always remain independent without necessarily finding themselves being juxtaposed between the political mandate of the country in line with private sector as well. So it's a balance, it's always a balancing space where they have to be. Over and above that, it is imperative that the regulator stays in line with what is happening in the market and all the industry issues that are happening within the country that they operate in. And the viewpoints, the various viewpoints of that particular country, considering the economic and social drivers and political objectives of a country. And ultimately, within its structures, the structure must take all that into consideration when it's being formed. And therefore, around the future challenges that we sit with ITU, is that as we shift in terms of convergence, the new challenges that are being faced, matters relating to privacy, security, and the digital content regulation, even though this is an area that it's finding its way within the regulator, it wasn't a core aspect of what regulation is, what the regulator has to do. And then moving it down to South Africa, considering this overarching framework that we need to consider, is that in terms of our national development plan, as a country, for us, the ICT infrastructure is amongst the backbone of everything that we as a country need to do, because as long as most of our people are not being included in having access to telecommunication and services, it does slow down innovation for a country, and therefore those are some of the things that we need to consider. And yes, with the plan of having the national and regional and municipal fiber optic network being spread out throughout the country, that on its own will require quite a significant investment, and it's an issue of how do we partner. Yes, government would have find a way to fund, but also how do we have a partnership with private sector in terms of ensuring that there's sufficient investment into South Africa's infrastructure within ICT. And part of what we need to be looking at is what challenges would be created in those funding models. And in addition to this, really, it's a driver to creating also jobs when you start improving the infrastructure network of South Africa. Currently in South Africa, we sit with what? Approximately about 17% of South African population have access to internet. And yes, this number is increasing, but it's not increasing at the pace that would assist the country to grow in terms of innovation and also getting to a point where we are competing with peers at the same level. I think, therefore, from an NDP point of view, there things like high-speed broadband and internet needs to be universally available, but at a competitive price, and that's a key aspect that comes as one of the things that we need to consider. And yes, where in South Africa's regulation, I think, hasn't moved as fast as required in order to keep up with the changes that are happening, because some of the changes that are happening is you finding that we are finding ourselves with OTT services that are coming into the country without necessarily the correct regulation. So things like Netflix, so they are challenging the other players currently in the South African industry, and those are some of the things that sits in our background. But ultimately, with the reality that we sit with in South Africa, is that we need to ensure ultimately that so we did an investment in Telkom, for instance, but it has not yielded the kind of returns that we had hoped for to some extent. Yes, some of the BE deals did go well, but there's little evidence that shows that there's an effective strategy that ensures that the connectivity of South Africa keeps up with everybody else within Africa and outside Africa. And therefore, it becomes very important that from a government perspective and a ministerial perspective, that the policies that are created are actually created fast enough, and the process of getting them approved needs to be more agile in order to ensure that we get down to regulations as quickly as possible and those regulations to be implemented, because I think part of the challenges we sit with as a country, we see a lot of great policies being created, but the regulation creation process does take quite a while. That is even outside of the ICT space, in fact. I do think that ultimately, part of the things we need to look at is yes, from an NDP point of view, is it talks to how do we look at spectrum bandwidth and how that can be taken to market, and beyond that, make it tradable and more accessible to more players. And we talk about the regulator itself, yes, currently not playing a lot within the pricing aspect, but then the question would be, and I think that what's happening with Competition Commission, it's shifting things and it's creating a burning platform for the regulator to start moving faster around those aspects. And also, I think what becomes another aspect is that ultimately South Africa needs to move faster on its e-strategy, And yet there are key areas and long-term goals that we hold as a country that will ensure that we have an extensive ICT in place, and how to make sure that all citizens have access to it. And lastly, within this context of the NDP, we want to know that the strategy looks at things like the local loop, and as well as spectrum efficiently and correctly, as well as identifying any alternatives to infrastructure in terms of ensuring that it increases some level of competition within the South African space. And when we go down to issues of policy, I think the role that needs to be played, especially around universal access as well, that becomes quite critical. And the policy associated with universal access needs to be finalized. And for me, I think that you need universal access, services and access, and that framework, it is clear now that with its shifting of USATA to be being devolved and powers for policymaking shifting purely to the minister, and then creating the shift to take the Universal Service and Access Fund to be a standalone entity by itself, so that it will collect the levies from private sector and use that, and yes, part of it being funded by government to a certain extent, and that those funds will be supportive of that process. And ultimately, I think one of the key things that we have, of course, is around the spectrum blanket treatment. I think because there's currently only, we are sitting with about 400 people with licenses, but how do we regulate that such that, yes, as much as it creates competition, but how do you make sure that each of those businesses and the license holders start having a sustainable business as well? Because I think if we look at the landscape today, the question for me is how do you ensure that the auctioning of spectrum doesn't create ultimately a challenge where someone holds the contract, but then actually the person sitting in behind it is purely the existing big players, and making sure that how have we done enough of a study as a country to ascertain whether the new players that we are bringing on board are going to be able to survive and constantly be able to offer the low pricing that we'd like to set up, but at the same time be profitable enough to provide returns for the various investors. And ultimately, yes, the clear understanding of the roles between what will be done by the minister, by the regulator, and each one of them, I think the underlying aspect of it is ultimately ensuring that you have an independent regulator that has individuals that are there to ensure that both the ministerial policy drive factors are being implemented as required. And lastly, I think when it comes to the imperative, yes, the regulator needs to facilitate the national broadband penetration, and as well as ensure that there's the efficient spectrum and numbering resources in order to support the rapid uptake of new ICT technology, around the issues of protection of consumers as well as those as the public at large, to ensure that consumer rights are protected and there is universal service and access. And ultimately, competition also needs to be looked at and ensure that it is fairly reflected in the cost of ICT within South Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank
Honourable members will now take some questions, having received the presentation. And I'll start with Honourable Kubega.
No, thank you, Mayor Amanda. Also, let me welcome the presentation with this soft voice that is presenting. Indeed, I can see that indeed Imbokodo is trying to work harder. So, Mayor Amanda, on the side of the information memorandum and policy directive, one of the key objectives of the policy directives of on a high demand spectrum is to promote to facilitate entry by new players into the market in order to deal with the deploy structure of the market. Do you believe that the IM published by ICASA facilitates entry by new players? If no, why not? If yes, does it do so?
The current IM, I do think it does consider that new players have to come in. I think the part that we need to look at is the part that I'm concerned about is whether we have considered how do you establish whether the new players are going to be sustainable. When I look at CELC and the challenges that they've gone through, it's an issue of how do we structure payments, and that aspect has not been captured well in terms of the levies that then have to be paid, the fees that have to be paid, whether can we have an elongated or lower the amount of levies that each of those new players are paying, so that they have a payment holiday at the beginning of their businesses in order to get them to a point where as they go to that J-curve, where they start to being more being profitable and sustainable. CELC as a big organization has had its own struggle around that up until recently when an arrangement that assists them to move forward. The question I would pose would be, how do we ensure that all these newcomers there's a consideration of that? Otherwise, we sit with a challenge where you'll have newcomers coming in. It'll be difficult for them to put capital. And yes, they may find investors, but you'd find that they end up passing on their contracts to somebody else who can bring the capital. And that's, I don't believe that that's the objective when it comes to creating competition. Thank you.
Honourable Fatou.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Amanda. Thank you for your presentation. One of my questions would be, there's a view out there that of criticism that the regulator is too weak, lacks capacity. What is your view with regards to that? And if given an opportunity to form part of the council, what changes can you make?
Thank you for the question, Honourable Fatou. I think for me, the biggest challenge for the and I agree with you, there is a viewpoint that it seems like the regulator is weak. But I think the challenge that you sit with is the clarity between the mandate of the regulator, and I think now with the clarity around policy setting and what the regulator needs to do is starting to be clear. For me, is I would be looking at how do you take the policy drivers and in line with the regulation, but also looking at the strategy of ICASA in making sure that we are responding to the national imperatives. Within that strategy, I would be saying, how do we then augment where we are weak? And where we do need to get resources, I would encourage that as a council member, I would be encouraging that let's find the budget and put in place all the technical expertise that we need within the organization. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My second question will be that what is the difference between SBP and ICASA?
Okay. Can I ask you to just elaborate the long name of FPB?
Films and Publications Board.
Okay. In terms of the where we are around broadcasting in South Africa, ICASA is taking on the part of the regulating broadcasting. Okay. Aspects of the broadcasting it would be part of the ambit of ICASA in terms of the ICT. Aspects of content, and I think this is where the convergence between the convergence of ICT and how content is received today, the alignment of the two is what would be creating a bit of a clarification of roles that would be required.
My last question will be, what is your understanding of the gazetted policy on high demand spectrum that was recently released by the Minister of Communication?
Okay. When it comes to high spectrum, it's the fact that it needs to be availed to everyone, and beyond just the main players, and it needs to be something that will be auctioned off. But of course, the question is the timelines of getting that auctioned off. Thank you.
Honorable Machozo.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Ms. Toba. I will link my two questions, Chairperson. How best do you think ICASA may support and monitor the implementation of the recommendations made by the Competition Commission? And if you are appointed as an ICASA counsel, what expertise will you bring on board to make sure that all these three elements are taken care of? Thank you.
Okay. I think with Competition Commission, the biggest challenge we sit with is that it has shifted the timelines that it literally has shifted the timelines that ICASA would have been working towards in bringing the other players into the fold, because all of a sudden we find ourselves with a decision that is suddenly saying everyone has come into the fold, especially when we look at their findings around ALTEC. And I think for me, I think somewhere we need to then go back and be specific around how do we ensure that the alignment between what Competition Commission has requested for and is expecting from a timeline point of view, because there is no way we're going to quickly get the process right without bringing the parties to some form of, I would say, understanding around timelines. Otherwise, we sit with the risk of making business decisions that are not driven by a clear business case around them, whereas you find that ALTEC has been operational all along. What I would bring in this environment is, yes, my background of understanding business and understanding how to deal with business cases, and yes, an engagement at various level of executives in businesses, in various businesses, as well as being able to engage with a regulator. I currently sit on a board where there is a regulator, and we've had to interact with Minister and with the regulator itself in taking it forward with the changes that are happening within that particular industry of property. Thank you.
Honourable Fundan.
What do you think of the... Good afternoon, sorry. What do you think of the Broadcasting Amendment Bill? So, in terms of the Broadcasting Amendment Bill, I do think part of our gaps as a country is the fact that we're not catching the OTT services. And for me, how do we ensure that our current broadcasters and other players, the South African players, are not adversely affected by all the non-regulated?
If you don't know it, you can just say you don't know it. It's fine. Do you know the Broadcasting Amendment Bill?
Yes.
The one that was proposed?
Yes.
Do you remember what the amendments were going to be?
Not all of them off by heart.
The key amendments.
Okay. If I remember well, it did talk to the issue of the... Sorry, memory. No, it's fine. I'm okay. I try to remember. So where I was talking about is around how our content is provided into South Africa, and that's one of the key things that it looked at, and it's a fundamental thing, fundamental aspect.
It doesn't do that, but that's fine. How do you feel about the must-carry regulations pertaining to the SABC?
I'm not going to be clear. I can't remember. Sorry.
Thanks, Chair. Molweni, Mama.
Yes,
ma'am. Njani.
Fine, thanks, and you?
All right. You raised an important aspect in your presentation of OTT services that are coming into the country unregulated. Obviously, they are also not even taxed. They are doing business in the country without having to pay tax. But you have not gone to make proposals on what would be the interventions that you propose on those services, especially due to the fact that you are applying to be a regulator yourself. Now, if you can elaborate on what you think we propose should happen. The second question is, if you were to be appointed, how soon can you release the spectrum? Because there's a lot of and the cry out every day in our meeting in public. How soon, and if you can do it sooner, what would be the process that you follow before you release the spectrum? Thanks, Chair. I think these are my only two questions.
I think when it comes to OTT services, So, for instance, just where, like Europe, have a catch-all framework that anyone who does put out their content into your country and where they're in your country and you use their content, you should be able to make sure that they do pay a level of contribution towards that country. And I think just like Europe does it in terms of Ofcom does it. I think it is quite important that as a country we don't lag behind the fact that because the shift, there's been a huge shift from subscription paying to in terms of content consumption versus where people are using the digital platforms to get content, whether it is Netflix or music around Spotify, whichever one. I do think that as a country, we need to be putting in place a quick framework, a catch-all framework that says anyone who does shared content within our country should at least pay a level of revenue in terms of use. Yes, you can't limit the number of people who watch because it's one is too many in most cases, but the membership could be the part that you use as the, in calculating how many people are actually accessing those platforms. And then the second question you talked about, how that the fact that there's been a high call for spectrums to be put in place, I do think that for me, first and foremost, in around timelines, I would say pushing to a 12-month to 18-month process where within that 12 months, what has to be clear is first and foremost, around the spectrum itself and everybody else that you're going to be, in terms of selling it out there, is how do we create a contractual obligation that ensures that whoever ends up purchasing and getting those licenses, how do how are they assisted in making sure that they are able to trade without necessarily ending up losing their contract to somebody else? And I think that exclusive trading block is important. But also I would want to know that we do create, in terms of sustainability, we create an environment and we must assess first, how many do we really need out there? Do we need 1,000 or do we need far less? So that, yes, you have enough players, but without, when you consider the number of population where we are in South Africa, we are estimated to be sitting in 2030 at about, the fact that there's 65 million people, when you consider that if the numbers increase extensively, it is not, yes, it will be great for pricing, and it will be great for competition, but it may not be great for sustainability. So we need to balance the two, for me, and that study is critical.
Just on a follow-up. I think the first part has been responded to. Look at, you raised an important point here, that most new users, when they come into the system after the spectrum is released, most of them are not sustainable. Now, in the same breath, what would you propose? What would help these new players sustain their businesses? And on the other side, I said you could also describe the process. You gave me the 12 months, yes, but what would be the process that you follow in the 12 months? I've not heard that part. If you can just in brief so that my minutes before they collapse.
Okay. First and foremost, I would want to first do a business case that establishes how to ensure what has made other players to be, how quickly did they get to be sustainable, so that we have a point of matching for those businesses in order to see where their J-curve, when they go up on their J-curve and start being profitable, first and foremost. And within that study, would want to understand how do we ensure that the cost side of that business can be limited for a period, so that if we're going to do any concessions, and I do think you would need some level of concession for anybody who's coming in completely new, because they're competing with existing business in the space. So for me, we would look at what is that number, even if they do contribute as a fee-paying organization for their levies, you would want that those to be limited because they are still a smaller organization that is still trying to find themselves in terms of finding how they grow and become sustainable. And with that, yes, you would have to include the various and public participation around those findings in order to make sure that the forward movement is not simply just for the regulator, but also all the players in the industry, that they're comfortable about the decisions that are going to be made and going to impact everybody for fairness.
Honorable Kisimbuzi.
No, thanks, Chairman.
Then just to go back to the point you continuously raise, I think Honorable Mlala has tried to make a follow-up again. Probably just give us your own views, let alone what is a discussion about players. Like you said, a business case is needed. Whether in your view, we really need the number of players that you're talking to, looking at what is there in terms of the market structure in the country. Your views on that, whether you think you should limit or you should expand. Because that question about sustainability, you've made an example of other players that came into play, collapsed in the process, the intervention is also taking longer to save them from that situation. I think it then begs the question, if you are adding 400 or more, how do you sustain that? So if you can just speak to it from a point of your own view, if you were to advise, looking at the market structure, which route would you say helps to sustain going forward?
Okay. I do think that you do need to expand it, but I don't believe that you can expand it all the way to the 400, because I do think some of the 400 will fall by the wayside. As much as we can provide it out there and give it to and people bid and do receive it, I don't believe that you're going to end up as a country. We will not sustain 400 businesses that are competing, and I do think that it is a challenge of, and this is my personal view, it's a challenge of how businesses operate, because you need quite a lot of capital to keep a business running in terms, and even with the support. To keep 400 operational will not be an easy feat, but I do think that it does help to allow them and give them the position of support at the early stages of their businesses.
Question further, because if you have got private players in place and look at the South African context, that those that you have found there will forever have that advantage because they have the infrastructure that they have. And then others may have to piggyback on that. In the example that you were giving, for example, of SLC and so on, from a regulatory point of view, what do you think should be then the intervention to prevent that, or to have at least what you called an agile response from a point of policy or policy?
I do think that as a regulator, what becomes important is to ensure that our relationship with the current existing players is to partly part of the levies that they provide could be contributing towards supporting the new entrants in the market. And I do think, yes, it is important to for a period assist in piggybacking on the infrastructure that already exists and that is currently being owned by the big players in order to ensure that the newcomers at least get to a certain level of survival.
Thanks, Ms. Tuba, for the responses. I take it that members have had an opportunity to interact with you, and we think we've got to that point now where we'll give you an opportunity to say your last words so that we thank you formally and allow you to go.
Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to come and do the presentation and engage with each one of you, and I'm looking forward to hearing from yourself. And for me, it's really about how do I make a difference in this country and my contribution as a businesswoman into South Africa and where we are heading as a country. Thank you very much.
Thank you for all other things.